Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Every Wednesday at 11 a.m., Doug Matthews is in studio with us as we go on the road, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Remember, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Tennessee fans, this is your hour to jump in and react to the Vols' victory at Auburn on the Plains. 615-737-1045, our number. You want to discuss the issues of the day, moving ahead to Alabama's matchup and looking ahead down the schedule. Jump in there and let's talk some ball with Coach Matthews.
It's been a little while since we've had a Wednesday like this with Coach Matthews.
Yes,
so
that is
give
true.
Us a call, 615-737-1045, 737-1045. Coach, I want to start with this one. Just the psychology of a win. When you're around a locker room where it's been difficult and you're working hard, you're trying to get over the hump, you can't seem to do it, and to sort of get that monkey off your back and finally get a legitimate win, especially on the road like that, how big can that be for a team?
Well, it was big for really everybody involved. This is big in no particular order. Certainly big for the players. Certainly big for the coaches in the program. It's big for the fans. You know, fans needed something like this.
Yeah.
Tennessee fans are like most fans. There's a few more of them than many some fan bases. But, you know, you always wonder, even though you know at some point you're going to win a game like this, at some point at times during the season, you say, I wonder if we ever will. But this is a big win. Number one, Auburn was a tremendous – it's a big win for this reason. Tough place to win. There's been a lot, and I was part of several of them. Really good Tennessee teams went down there and got their butt beat because that's a tough place to play, especially for Tennessee. But
you also, logistically, they stayed in Montgomery. There's not really a lot of places to stay there.
There's not. And quite frankly, what most coaches do, I know what the guy I worked for did was, if we didn't win, we stayed in another town. We stayed in Columbus. We stayed in Montgomery. I don't know if there is a place in Auburn. You don't stay there for sure. So you move around. Matter of fact, I think I heard Coach Pruitt say that the Auburn team was staying right across the street, I believe, in Montgomery also. But, you have to do that a lot of places, quite honestly. Very few people stay in a town like in Athens, or most folks that come in Knoxville stay out by the airport. They don't want to be down around the university. But it was from that standpoint, it was a good win. And the way that it was won, you know, had to do a lot of different things, had to have a good kicking game, which they did, culminated in recovering in an onside kick. Had to have a very stingy defense that gave up ground grudgingly, which for the most part Tennessee did, and had to have an offense that was going to play almost error-free from a turnover standpoint, and Tennessee did that. If there was ever a game, and I'm sure people get tired of me talking about field position, you know, that's old-time football. Well, it was old-time football, but still old-time football today. The most important factor in winning and losing games that are competitive is who has the ball and where they have it. It's much more important of where the ball is than who has the ball. And Tennessee was able to have outstanding field position. Just real quickly, 12 Auburn drives. All right, they had 12 possessions. They had one before half, but that was a kneel down. 12 of the actual possessions that Auburn had, 10 of them were on their 25 or inside. So they started drive 75 yards minimum away from Tennessee's goal line. You can win games doing that. And the way you get that field position is by kicking and not turning the ball over. Of course, Tennessee did not turn the ball over and had a really good punting and kickoff day.
Were you more pleased with the ability for Tennessee to push the football down the field in the passing game or their ability to get Chandler more involved?
Well, I think both, and I think, quite frankly, those came out of the open week. There is no
doubt.
Which
one was most critical to what happened, though?
I think pushing the ball down the field was. And I don't know exactly how many deep routes Tennessee threw. I knew the first one they threw was the last play of the first quarter, 30-yard completion to Chandler, and then I think they had 6, 7, 8 after that. But that was what it was paramount to get done. They were going to get Chandler the ball, and they did. 21 touches in the game. I talked, I think, last week. Chandler needs 18 to 20 touches a game. Again, I'm talking about in competitive games. If you're playing ETSU, no. But when you're playing conference games, he needs that many touches. He got 21. And they were, a lot of them were tough yards. But pushing the ball down the field was the key thing. And that all came from the open week. No doubt in my mind, I know that Jeremy Pruitt was in that offensive staff room because he had time to be in there. I know that he asked a lot of the questions that was out there. Why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we doing this? Why can we not get pass protection, at least get people in their way? There was a key move there on the offensive line. They changed the right guard, got a younger guy out and a three-year guy in, and all that paid off dividends. And then they played well, and Auburn didn't have their best ball game.
And when it comes to Chandler, instead of just trying to work him into the offense, which they certainly did, you would know better than us here. Is it more about him just finally being healthy? Because he missed the second game. The third game, he was worked back in. He scored a long touchdown in that one. The Florida game, everything fell apart for the offense. And then against Georgia, he had some nice moments, and then everything clicked last Saturday.
No, I don't think it was quite that much. Let's just go all the way back. First off, he was hurt early in the West Virginia game, first two series, so he essentially missed that whole game. Then I think he could have played the next week against UTEP, against ETSU, but again, it was a concussion situation. He was cleared, but held him out there. So really, he had not played that much. But the difference was they found ways to get him the football. And that was the most key part to me of this open week, that they were able to say, hey, we got to get him the ball. And let's look what happened. Last in the Auburn game, we essentially saw two running backs. We saw Jordan. He played, carried the ball, I think, 13, 14 snaps, one or two passes. And we saw Chandler. We didn't see those other two guys play much. London was in for a play or two, I think probably for pass protection purposes. Banks didn't play at all. So they got back to getting, or got to eventually getting, hey, we're not going to try to play all four guys. And I think what happened is that now, and again, I'm going to give a lot of credit to the open week. They said, okay, here's who we are. Here's who our playmakers are. And here's the way we have to get them the football. And from an offensive game plan, you can quibble about, and I would, about maybe having a reverse in there, some misdirection. But overall, it was an excellent game plan that paid huge dividends. But it all started by attacking those cornerbacks with taller, more physical players and having a big day doing that. Now, you're not gonna hit 8 for 8 or whatever it was, 7 for 8, 8 for 9, whatever it was. But with these guys, with Chandler and with Jennings, you're going to be over 50%. And, that's why Chad reminded me on Sunday's show. They're not 50-50 balls anymore. They're 75-25 Tennessee balls, because these two guys in particular, and you can even throw Palmer in there a little bit. He's a taller guy too, not quite as physical. They're taller and more physical than every single defensive back in this league. So I think you're going to see a good bit more of that as we get into the more of the conference schedule.
The Titans play here.
Oh, my goodness!
The Sports Station, 104.5, The Zone.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. A special show announcement for Doug Matthews. He gets to sleep in on Sunday morning. Big Orange Sunday. This Sunday will be after Titans coverage. Titans radio coverage begins at 6:30 in the morning with the Lee Company countdown to kickoff, followed by Titans countdown live from Wembley Stadium at 7:30. Kickoff of the Titans and Chargers is at 8:30 Central Time, 8:30 Nashville Time. Which means Big Orange Sunday, which is normally week to week, 8 to 9 o'clock in the morning, has been pushed and bumped to post-game after Titans and Chargers coverage here on The Zone, which will be roughly 2 o'clock, 2:30, somewhere around there. But, Doug, you'll go on the air after the local postgame show is off
and
the air.
It will be at the top of the hour, not in the not in the middle of the hour. And again, it will be a live show. It'll just come on after the Titans game for obvious reasons. This 104.5 The Zone's the flagship of Titans Radio, and they're playing over in London. So it'll be roughly 2 o'clock.
So you get to sleep in instead of getting up at 5:30 like normal. You'll get up at 6 on Sunday? Is that right?
Well, I go to bed early and get up early. That's kind of... Yeah. I'm not in John Gruden's territory yet. He's 3:33 or whatever it is.
It's not a bad way to live life.
If he don't start winning, he may change his routine.
You got that right.
Juwan Jennings, we talked about his ability to go up and get it. I'm really impressed and always have been with his toughness as a runner. If it's 3rd and 7 and he catches the ball 4 yards down the field, he's getting those 3 yards if he has to drag a defensive back with him to get it. Do you see a scenario where they get a little bit more creative in some sort of a wildcat package for him being a high school quarterback? To me, if you're looking for a guy to get the tough yard on 3rd and 1 or 3rd and 2, Juwan Jennings is as good as anyone on the team to get those yards.
I don't think they'll go wildcat because I think they have better runners in their tailback position. Certainly Chandler, Jordan, and even Banks. Banks didn't play last week. You're going to see Jeremy Banks playing more. His thing is, and I perfectly understand it, hey, until you show us where you're going to hold on to the ball, we can't afford to put you in the ball game. But Banks is going to be an excellent, I think he's going to be an outstanding player. But Jennings absolutely getting more involved, and that was, it wasn't a baby step, it was a big step. He had 5 receptions. 71 yards and a touchdown. And of those 71 yards, I'm going to bet you 40 of them came after contact. He is a physical football player. He needs to be the number one target, in my opinion, right now. You can move him around. And don't forget this. A couple of years ago, down at Florida, touchdown pass from he was a high school quarterback. He can throw the ball. There are some things you can do with him out of whether it be a little – instead of a quick screen, bubble screen, throw it a little bit behind him.
Going back to him.
Lots of things you can do. I think you're going to see doing that. Listen,
he had a touchdown pass at Texas A&M in 2016 also on one of those plays.
It was an extra two-point play.
You're right, where Dobbs threw it back to him.
But the fact is you can do some things with him on that. But he, I don't really have favorite players, but if I did, he would be right up at the top because you have to he's a blocker. He's a runner. He's a receiver. He is a emotional player out on the field. There's no way, I haven't talked to anybody up there, there's no way you can't tell me that coaches and players don't love this guy. And one of the things to always keep in mind, here's a great example of a young man who could have been off this team just as easily as he was on this team this year, but because of an experienced athletic director,
That first decision, before you get into this, can we revisit just how dumb it was for an interim head coach and the AD to sign off on that with a guy spouting off, and instead of suspending him indefinitely until you get the permanent coach in, kicking the guy off the football team who's one of your better players? That a game like that illustrates just how dumb that decision was to me.
One of the greatest quotes that I ever heard attributed to Bear Bryant, who, in my opinion, was the best coach ever. Now, there's a guy down there making a run at it. Let's say pre-2000. He made this, Ken Donahue, his longtime defensive coordinator, told me this about him. I was asking about him one time and got into a long discussion. Anyway, but roughly this, I said, boy, he'd run players off, wouldn't he? And he looked at me and he smiled and he said, Doug, he never, ever ran a good one off. You don't get rid of good players. You do everything you can to keep them. Now, sometimes you have to get rid of them. But, boy, if you got a good player, you do everything you can to keep him. Philip understood that. And he also understood the situation that happened. It shouldn't have happened. Juwan was wrong. But that situation wasn't handled very well either. And that's been you take two guys coming back. Although in a different way, and even though he hasn't been quite the player yet that we thought, Darren Kirkland Jr. coming back. Where's this team without Darren Kirkland Jr. on defense and without Juwan Jennings on offense? Maybe not difference one and long, but those are two leaders who are very fine players that you have to keep on your team. But I'm I've had one hello with Juwan Jennings. I don't know him, know his family a little bit, but I'm just happy for him because he is making a huge addition to this football team in so many ways. Covers kicks, does everything they want him to do. But to answer your question, I think we're going to start seeing some more things. We'll see some of those things that we just talked about as they add to this offense.
Doug Matthews is in studio with us, taking your phone calls right now at 615-737-1045. Doug, let's start with Ryan up on line one. Speaking of the Vols wide receivers, what's up, Ryan?
Hey, Doug. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
So, question about those receivers, in Jennings and Callaway and even Palmer. I want to know what role or what you think Tyson Hilton, instead of being up in the box, because each of those receptions, especially pushing the ball down the field, which I feel like it was the first game we've really pushed it, you know, deep down the field like that. Do you think him being down there, you know, seeing the size of these guys and just seeing it different than up above, because they were covered, you know, but they went up and they made a play because they're big physical receivers. Do you think that made a difference in him, you know, pushing it down the field more?
Well, I think a couple of things. And if you watched, number one, most offensive coordinators, and matter of fact, every offensive coordinator that I ever worked with was in the press box. Everyone I ever worked with. The defense coordinators, a couple of them were. When I became coordinator, I wanted to be down on the field for a lot of different reasons. But I think what happened was, and let's just go back, where are Alabama's coordinators most of the time? They're on the field. I think what happened in this off week was, I think Jeremy Pruitt said, Tyson, I want you down there on the field. And if you noticed, when you're down there on the field, and again, I can tell you this from experience from the head coach, if he wants to talk to you, he don't have to get on the headset. He can pull you over there and look you right in the eye. And I think that's what happened. And I think there were times in this ball game, again, because of this open date, where Jeremy Pruitt looked at him and said, I want to throw the ball more. I want to attack him deep more. He was seeing things from that defensive front. Remember, Auburn's defense, as is Georgia's and as will be Alabama's, it is the exact defense that Tennessee plays. So if anybody knows how to attack that thing and where to attack it, it's Jeremy Pruitt. And where can you attack it best with the personnel Tennessee has? Man-on-man wide receivers. Throw those jump balls down there. Listen, I'm going to rehash just a couple of things I talked about Sunday. Juwan Jennings and Callaway are not going to run by any cornerbacks in this league. They're probably 4'7 guys, maybe 4'6", 5. They're not going to run by anybody. But they'll out-jump and out-physical all of them. So if your game plan, now Palmer can run by him, but if your game plan is to throw passes and have him catch it in stride, reaching out, stretching, that's probably not going to work. But if your game plan is go down there 30 yards, I'm going to throw the ball up, you go up and get it. If you don't get it, will have an incomplete pass. That's the game plan, and that's what Tennessee did. And again, I put a lot of credit on this because of that open date. I can't stress enough that open date with Coach Pruitt being able to spend probably 2 to 3 full days in there with the offense.
Doug Matthews is in studio with us, Forkless Systems Football Saturday, 9 to 11 a.m. every Saturday morning right here on The Zone, followed by Coach to Coach with Doug Matthews, Dave McGinnis, and Larry Stone at 11 a.m. every Saturday morning. That gets you primed and ready for kickoff. And then a special start time for Big Orange Sunday on this Sunday after the Titans and Chargers game in London. He will go on somewhere around 2 p.m., give or take a few minutes there based on post game. So mark that down. And look, always go and check out the websites if you missed the shows. Coach2CoachRadio.com and CoachDougMatthews.com. Matthews spelled with one T. CoachDougMatthews.com.
High school football Fridays, college football Saturdays, NFL football Sundays, and free money Monday through Friday. Friday. We are your football and free money station. Your shot at $1,000 four times every weekday at 8 a.m., 11 a.m., 2 p.m., and 5 p.m. All you have to do is text the national keyword to win. Don't text and drive, but do text to win. Rules and details at 1045thezone.com. 4K a day on 1045 The Zone.
It is the Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. One of our favorite hours each week is happening right now. Doug Matthews, man, he is in studio with us, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. And as far as weekend shows go, Doug Matthews owns the zone on the weekend. Let's just put it out there.
They bang hats.
They do.
They bang hats
Doug
on the
does.
Weekend.
9 to 11, Forklift Systems football Saturday. And then at 11 a.m. on Saturday morning, Coach to Coach with Doug Matthews and Dave McGinnis. Coach Mack joins us every Thursday morning, but he's here today coming through the studio, getting ready to get ready for Coach to Coach. Coach Mack joins us now with Doug Matthews. It is an excellent show. You guys are doing a great job.
Thank you. Coach Matthews is doing a good job. I'm just sitting there next to him. What I'm doing right here, right now, with David Reed, I'm running this board.
You're back there with Reed.
I'm running the board.
I like that song you just played for us. That
Thank
was great.
You very much.
Back.
You know,
good selection.
When you say chairman of the board now, you got to say chairman of the board, Coach Mack.
That's right. He's taking over, Reed.
Yes. Hey, I love doing this coach-to-coach with Doug Matthews so much. I mean, the main thing I like doing with Coach Matthews, though, is going to high school games and sitting up there and coaching the entire game. The entire game. I was worn out.
You even got us, me, unbeknownst to me, on the call-in show afterwards. Hey, I'll say this about Dave McGinnis. I think I like football. I think I love football. This guy loves every form of football. I bet he likes rugby. High school, junior, it don't make any difference.
That's right.
He's at a game somewhere watching football, and he and I laugh a lot about this. You know, I grew up in Oklahoma. He grew up in Texas, small town. I'm a little bit older than he is. There is absolutely no love lost between those two states. They do not like each other because they're both football states. And as he will tell you before when we were talking about doing the coach to coach, you know, had to replace Coach Fulmer, the Texas part of him kind of got in the way a little bit, but he assured me that he wouldn't bring it into the studio.
Hey, Doug, when I told all of my friends back at KSNY 1050 in Snyder, Texas, that I was doing a radio show with a guy from Oklahoma, they said you can't come back home.
And those are good times.
Honestly, though, it is one of the best listens and best primers you can find out there for college football and getting you ready for game day. Not just on Tennessee football. You guys have that covered. But on the SEC and the big matchups across the country.
We can hear Coach to Coach this weekend. Also, another program reminder, Titans Chargers, 8:30 a.m. You can hear Coach Mack there with Titans Radio.
Right.
And then 2 p.m., time change for Big Orange Sunday.
Guys, this will be my fourth trip to London, but I'm so looking forward to doing this trip with you guys. This is going to be fun. I don't think you bang hats over there. I think you bang, what do they call those big, tall things those guards wear at Buckingham Palace?
Is that a pith helmet?
I don't know.
We've learned about pith helmets this week.
No, the big, tall things they wear. You know where they stand?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
It's a huge hat.
Yeah, well,
that's what I call it.
We're going to be banging huge hats.
All I know is we're going to get Paul in one of those.
Yes. We're going to get Paul in a lot of things. Absolutely. All right, guys.
Thank you, Mac.
See you, Coach. See you.
Doug, it's been a really good transition from Fulmer to Coach Mac for Coach to Coach.
You know, it's a completely different show. Larry and I, when we decided, it was decided for us, obviously. Philip Fulmer couldn't come on the air and let me ask him why that dumb rear end head coach of his called that particular play.
Yes.
Dave was the Larry came up with Dave. We talked to Jeff Fisher about it, quite frankly, one another coach. But the thing that Dave brings is that I think we are good together at. I was never a head football coach, and he was for two, three, four years. He's a long time defensive guy, and I am a long time defensive guy, and we kind of look at games that way, and hopefully get that across to the fans listening out there.
All right, we promised Matt, Daniel, and Scott if they hung with us, we would go rapid fire to them. We're going to do that right now. Matt, thank you for being patient. Go right ahead.
Hey, Coach Matthews, a pleasure and honor to speak with you, sir. Got one note about the game against Auburn. I've heard a lot of people talk about negatively about running the football on first down. I went back and watched the game. Of us running the football on first down, we chewed up almost 6 minutes and 57 seconds, give or take a few seconds, after I timed it running the football on first down. Now some of those, or most of those were one, minus one, 2 yard plays, I understand. But ultimately, in the game of football, with the talent that Tennessee has, they're going to have to shorten the football game. I just wanted to hear what your thoughts were on that and see what your remarks are and going forward. And hey, go Vols. Thank you, sir.
Well, I think the game plan that you saw there was what they tried to do against Georgia, but the game got out of hand. But that's the way Tennessee's going to have to play this year. They're going to have to run the ball. And let me tell you just a little key there. Sometimes those 1 and 2 yard gains, they don't look like much. I thought Ty Chandler had some of the best 2-3 yard runs that we've seen all year long. He was making something out of nothing. But if you're at least gaining yards, if you remember going into the game the week before, what Coach Britt was talking about, how we have too many second down and 11s or 12s, you know, or 13s. There's not a big difference in yardage, but there is a big difference in play calling when it's second down and 8 or even second down and 7.5 or 9. You can do so many things, and you're going to see this team. They're going to pound the ball inside in there, and they're probably not going to get a whole lot against the really good defenses. But again, it kind of sets up those deep throws. That's why it was so very important to get Chandler out of the backfield on that little seam route, which was an excellent call. They knew what they were going to be in. No one covered him. And to get those, what I would call 75-25 balls. But you're going to continue to see. This team pretty much, with play calls, was about a 50% run, 50% pass against Auburn. I think that's probably what we're going to see the rest of the way. Again, if the game doesn't get out of hand. If you get down 3 touchdowns, obviously you got to throw it a little bit more if you want to get back in it.
Scott is on deck. We go next to Daniel. Daniel, welcome in.
Thank you for taking my call. Want to say that I'd almost forgotten how to celebrate after we beat Auburn. It had been so long, but I'm not delusional. I know what we got coming to town this week. What are a couple keys that we can keep this thing competitive, maybe into the second half here, make Tua play in the fourth quarter. I just want to get your take on that. Go Big Orange.
Not for certain Tua's playing right now. Also, there's a lot of doubt right now that he's even going to play at all in this game.
Well, Daniel, that's a great question. The game plan for Tennessee started that they're going to have to do started a little bit in Georgia, but it's what you saw against Auburn. This team is not going to go out and outscore SEC opponents. The good thing is there's just a couple of them that's going to outscore Tennessee. But going to have to play the way we played. Good, solid defense. There's some matchup problems. Listen, the Alabama offensively, and I'm not saying this as a joke, you almost need 12 players or 13 players to be able to cover everything they do. And it's because they got a special guy at quarterback. Now, even if he doesn't play, they got an experienced guy at quarterback. But they got 3 wide receivers. I think between them, they've caught 18 touchdown passes. Alabama's only completed 88 passes this whole year, and 20 of them have been for touchdowns. Maybe more than 20. Tua's thrown 20. It might be more than 20. But Tennessee's going to just have to go out and try to play, you know, put together a good game plan, which they'll have. They know how to attack this defense. They're going to have to throw the ball deep. If they have any chance at all of staying in the game, they're going to have some deep completions, and they just simply can't turn the ball over. In the past, what's happened against Alabama is that they've given up, Tennessee's given up a couple of key turnovers, maybe a couple of years ago, interception on the 10, they punched that in for a touchdown. But even with that, this is a game, yes, listen, these coaches, these players believe that they can win this game. As an observer, I don't see any way they can win it, but I would never, ever say that because I've been in ball games where we should not have won, or on the other hand, where we should have won and we didn't. But just get better. Play hard. And this team is playing hard right now, and that's what you can ask for as a fan.
Let's go to Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey, guys. I always love this hour.
Thank you.
Coach Matthews, everybody's saying that, or the national media and the SEC media, they're saying that Tua won't play because it's a guaranteed victory for Alabama. Which, you know, I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying I would never guarantee anything one way or the other. But my take on it is last year, if you go back to the last couple of years when we played Bama, quarterback takes off running. He gets in the open field. The defensive backs are going to hit him. One of them may be Mosley or number 13, the guy that played for the Vols last couple of years. Well, there's a big difference between what we had and what we have now with Thompson and Alante Taylor. I think if he don't play Tua, I think it's because when he gets in the open field, I like Alante Taylor's chances, to be honest with you. If he goes to thump the quarterback or thumps anybody else in the open field, I really like the way he plays physically, not just from strength, but I'm talking about from laying the pads down and just putting a lick on somebody. So I think if he don't play him, I think it's because of that, and Hurts is just better fitted for that type of game. And I think we are the most physical team that they have played to date. Even though we may not be the most talented, I do think we're the most physical in defense. Thanks, guys.
Well, you make a good point. I wanted to touch on one thing today about a change that was made last week in the secondary. It was mainly because Abernathy could not play. But what Tennessee did was, what Coach Pruitt did was, he moved Buchanan, who had been playing cornerback, inside to the nickelback. Easier to play a nickel than it is to play a corner in this defense. That allowed him to play Bryce Thompson and Alante Taylor, two true freshmen who are getting better and better and better. And these guys haven't had an offseason. Alante had one. But they'll have that now. You move Schamburger inside to nickel, and then the other change was, you moved Buchanan into nickel, and then you moved Schamburger, who had been playing the nickel, back to the safety position that Warrior was playing. You get more speed back there, along with Warrior. Did I say Warrior? Warrior and Abernathy was out. He comes back and plays Abernathy's position. And keep in mind, too, for the future, this is future, but Flowers is an excellent player. This secondary is going to look so much different next year. We're starting to see some of it now as they're getting the pieces in place. But to be able to have two cover corners that can cover, and they can, to be able to have a couple of safeties, one that can come up and knock you, hit you, and the other that can cover and play a high safety, that's where this team is getting better. This team's getting better in two areas. They're getting better in the defensive secondary, and they're getting better in the offensive line. The offensive line improvement just came as simply getting hats on the right people. They were getting blown up by Carvin in particular. He's a true freshman. He didn't know who to block sometimes. And when you don't know who to block, you're going to stand and look most of the time. So making that change with Niehaus there was huge. This secondary was good. Now they're going to have to overcome a few injuries. But you know what? Everybody this time of year has to overcome a few injuries.
Saturday's win over Auburn reminded me a bit of a situation that Kiffin faced in his 1 year, where in his first season, where they lost a home game to UCLA that they really should not have lost. They had first and goal and could not punch it in. There were some questions about issues there. They go to Florida and lose, and then they return home that season and beat Georgia. And what happened Saturday, at least from what I was observing, is similar. You had in that year Jonathan Crompton with some real problems to begin. They figured it out. They figured out how to use him, how to maximize his talent, and limit him on issues that he wasn't really great at. And they figured it out. This staff, have they done that with Garantano? Can you say the same thing?
I think they have. Here's the difference in quarterbacks. Listen, at that level, And you could make that case for many programs, but certainly at the SEC level, if they recruit a quarterback, he has talent. If they recruit him to be a quarterback, he has talent. But what sets whether you can play or not has a lot to do with your comprehension. Hopefully you know a little bit about that when you're recruiting him, but also how tough you are and what Garantano showed this staff was in this team. Hey, knock me down. I'm going to stand right back here in that pocket and do it again. When you got a guy that can actually play the game and can get knocked around and get up off the ground and doesn't make many mistakes, you can build around that. And what this team has done is this offensive staff, much to their credit, they now are building around what he can do. He's not going to run the option. He'll pull the ball down and go get 3 or 4 yards. He's not going to force the ball into coverage. He may take a sack or two, but not many. He gets rid of the football, and now they know what he can do, and so you're seeing a build around him. Listen, he had, if you just go back and look at that ball game against a people, you know, don't forget this was an, it was and is an excellent Auburn defense. He had a tremendous game in this ball game. Now, he was helped out by some guys making some big catches, but he put the ball where they could catch it. I believe he only had one throw that was out of bounds on one of those deep passes. But just one, and keeping the ball in bounds is of paramount importance. It doesn't do any good to, whether a guy's covered or not, throw the ball out of bounds. You can't, if he catches it out there, it's no good. But absolutely, I think they know what he can do, and this team knows what he can do, and I think you're going to continue seeing him build on that.
Still a lot of football to be played, and the ups and downs of the season will continue. But what is it about Jeremy Pruitt that prevented two things from happening? Number one, we didn't see the exodus of players leaving this offseason. And maybe more importantly, he kept the team not only focused, but he seemed to get an even bigger buy-in after the Florida debacle. What would you point to with all of that?
I think number one is they found out very quick this guy isn't a BSer. He doesn't BS the press. I can tell you from talking to the athletic director, he doesn't BS him. That's one reason why he hired him. And secondly, he doesn't this team. Chad was mentioned before. I haven't watched any of the coaches' shows on Sunday, but the same way there. This guy admits when he makes a mistake. He admits when he doesn't know something. He is very solid in the things that he does know. And I think what he did with this team was from the very first day, guys, I don't want any of you to leave because you think that I don't want you here. That is a huge change from going all the way really back to Lane Kiffin's tenure. When Orgeron came in, they ran off 10 or 12 players. Now, some of them should have been run off. But he said, I want you to stay here. I want you to give us a chance. I'm going to give you a chance. And if you remember, there was a lot of fans saying, well, how come he won't say this guy is playing well? He didn't mention anybody's names in spring practice, hardly at all. And very few individual names during fall practice. He was talking about the position, the competition. And I think that was a big thing. And you know what? You enjoy playing for guys like that. You enjoy working for people like that. You enjoy working for people, whoever your boss is, that levels with you. You know, sometimes maybe it gets a little heated, but primarily just saying, hey, you know, as Bill Belichick says, this is your job. Go do your job. And I think Jeremy Pruitt does that in spades.
One quick thing that I noticed in the post-game show on Vol Network when they were talking to Jeremy Pruitt, he was asked a lot of questions specifically about Jarrett Garantano. He continued to deflect every time. He said, well, you know, the offensive line played better. The receivers played well. He would go to the special teams and how the kickers and the kicking game played well. So even after a big game with that, and Garantano, by the way, spoke to the media for the first time since Jeremy Pruitt's there after the Auburn game and that performance. So that was a vote of confidence from Jeremy Pruitt and the coaching staff. But he would still deflect and talk about the entire team in those moments.
We are on the road with Doug Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Remember, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Sponsored by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive.
Coach, I'm watching the Florida-Vandy game. And when that little dust-up between Derek Mason and Todd Grantham and Dan Mullen and CJ Ayu as defensive line coach for Derek Mason at Vanderbilt, when that happened, I thought to myself, I can't wait to talk to Coach Matthews about this. What did you think of everything that went down, from how it started with a Vandy player getting hit, the Florida player getting ejected, and then Dan Mullen complaining in the halftime interview saying, well, Steve Shaw and Greg Sankey are going to have to take a look at this and find out what's going on. I still don't know what Dan Mullen was seeing on the field that he was objecting to that Vanderbilt was doing. That really hasn't been clarified yet.
Oh, I think he was objecting to the fact that Derek Mason was over on that sideline. Rightfully so, he had an injured player.
Yeah.
And was probably making a few comments. Now, I want Vanderbilt fans will remember this. Probably Florida will too. Defense coordinator at Florida.
Todd Grantham.
Todd Grantham. Do you remember when he was at Georgia and same thing happened? Now, I don't know what Grantham's role was in this, but after
he was jumping up and down yelling at the coaching staff for Vandy.
Well, after the game, the game was played here in Nashville, And when James Franklin was the head coach, he got into it with Franklin after the ball game. If you remember, about 4 or 5 years ago, that's when he was at Georgia. So, listen,
he's got a history.
That usually doesn't happen between head coaches. It rarely happens between assistants. I'm sure Coach Mason thought it was an illegal block. It got penalized. I'm just guessing what went on, and there were probably some comments made that neither liked, but they got over it pretty quick. They were hugging after the game. That's a great thing about this sport. You know, you recruit against these guys, you coach against them. Almost every assistant at some point has been coached with or against, and you get heated during the ball game, and then you can hug and, you know, and maybe have a drink afterwards.
I thought Vandy let a golden opportunity slip away. It was that 11 a.m. sleepy start time. They're up 21-3. They're playing well. And when it was 21-3, it was the first time I thought, Vandy just may pull this off. That may be enough against this Florida offense to get it done. And boom, Florida's offense looks great, and they come back and win by 10 points. What did you think about kind of the missed opportunity there?
Well, first off, Florida is, I did not think going into nor coming out of the Tennessee game they were that good a team. I was wrong. They're a good football team. Now, they're not going to outscore a lot of folks. They're going to have a lot of games like that. But, you know, you take Georgia out of the East right now, and, of course, they got knocked down a notch, but they're still significantly better. Those other six teams, they're all about alike. You know, Tennessee can beat Missouri. Missouri can beat Tennessee, Vanderbilt. They all can beat each other, including Florida. Florida's had some big wins. Mm. To get that LSU win, that was a huge win, and they're in position right now of something that I didn't think would happen, still might not happen, but listen – when they play in Jacksonville, Georgia with that loss right now, Florida wins that ball game, and Kentucky's still in this thing too. Now, I don't think Kentucky's quite strong enough, but they might be. We could see a lot of fun happening in the East at the end of the year.
Doug, you mentioned to us last week, in the last 2 weeks really, that you liked Vanderbilt's chances against Florida because of Florida's offense. You thought that if Vanderbilt could put up some points, they could contest that game and win that game. How do you feel about the matchup this Saturday night against Kentucky for Vandy and how they match up?
Same way. Okay. Because outside of just a couple of teams in this league, nobody, if you play good, solid defense and don't give the game away. Like, you know, Tennessee and Florida would have been a pretty darn even game minus those six turnovers. Well, those six turnovers happened. But I think most of the games in the East, that's kind of what I was alluding to. None of them are going to score a lot of points, probably, without a lot of help. So that means you go into the fourth quarter with a chance to win or lose. And, you know, maybe a block kick, maybe an onside kick, maybe a fumble. What happened at Tennessee and Auburn? The game the play that won that game, it certainly helped win it, was a scoop and score on defense on a bad play by a quarterback. So that's why it's so important to get into that fourth quarter with a chance, stay within a touchdown, stay within a score. You got a chance. And that's all you can ask for in many games. And there's going to be a bunch of those games in the East this year.
It's tough not to like, and really not to love, what Ed Ogeron's doing with LSU this year. That was an enormous win on Saturday. And another reminder that when you get to that upper level in the SEC and you go on the road, things like that are going to happen, even to great teams like Georgia. And I think Georgia is a great team.
Well, just look at LSU. They got to go down and play in the Swamp. And the Swamp that day reminded me of some of those Tennessee-Florida games back in the 90s. It was a rocking place. LSU loses. Georgia comes in the next week to Baton Rouge. And you got the same type of crowd there. And the thing that LSU is doing now, and Joe Burrow is a perfect example. I don't know his exact stats, but I'll tell you this. He is right around 51, 52% completions. You know, he's running the ball a little bit now. I think he ran for 80 yards, been 50 the time before. He's just a pretty good quarterback that they are building around and doing the things that they do so well. They've always had great talent. And they still have great talent, and they're playing better now. And they're going to be, when they play Alabama, I think that's going to be a really great game to watch. Alabama's better, but again, you get that confidence going. Talented athletes with a lot of confidence, you know, they usually play well in big games.
Doug Matthews with us. Let's wrap up with discussing Tennessee's matchup against Alabama. What is the most impressive aspect to you that the Tennessee staff has been able to do on defense from an individual standpoint? Which player do you think is the best coaching job to this point from how you've evaluated defense?
I would say overall, I would say it's because of Jeremy Pruitt and what he is doing on the overall defense. If I had to pick an area, it would be the defensive front. They are getting about everything they can out of this group. Now, they got three seniors up there. When they had Kongbo, who's essentially a defensive lineman, I don't want to get into that conversation again.
Yeah.
Outside linebackers, a defensive end. They had all seniors. Kongbo's out now. Taylor's going to have to play. Probably going to see a little bit more of a couple of other guys, the Johnson youngster. But I think up front, what they're doing there, they're good, solid players, and you would expect them to be because Tracy Rocker was that type of player with a ton of ability, and he was that type of coach. So they're playing so sound on defense right now. About the only thing that they are not doing as well as I know they would like, they're not a great tackling team. But a lot of that, I think, has to do with the fact that athletic ability and maybe strength in some areas. And they're playing some guys that can make you break tackles.
The move to the sideline for Tyson Helton, was it a difference maker? And if so, why?
I think it certainly helped for the reasons that I was talking about a little bit earlier. Now you got the head coach can come up to you. Again, I've been there. I was always on the sideline. When that head coach can come up and corner you, and not have to talk through a headset, and you can look him, and you can look at his mouth and look at his eyes, and he can talk to you. It makes a difference. That happened in this ball game, probably more than we know, but it certainly happened several times on running the ball, and I think it was a key move. If I'm a head football coach, and I never was one, I would have both my coordinators on the sideline, period, because I want them to be able to talk to their players face to face. And I want me to be able to talk to them face to face. And I think that's the best results. There's been others that have done it different ways. But if I was a head coach, that's what I'd want.
Doug Matthews, thank you for sticking around and giving us an extra segment here of analysis. Doug joins us each and every Wednesday on the road, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Remember, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Sponsored by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Let's remind everyone the time changes this weekend. Nothing on Saturday changes. 9 to 11, Forklift Systems football Saturday. And then coach to coach with Doug Matthews and Dave McGinnis and Larry Stone. That's Saturday morning at 11 a.m. They get you primed for all the kickoffs, especially in the Southeastern Conference and especially with the Tennessee Volunteers. Then, Big Orange Sunday, normally Sunday mornings at 8 o'clock in the morning, it will air after the Titans coverage wraps up here on 104.5 The Zone. So that's roughly 2 p.m., 3 p.m., somewhere around there. That's where you can catch that. You can also catch it online, coachtocoachradio.com and coachdougmatthews.com.
And Big Orange Sunday will be a live show. It will not be taped. It will be a live show. It just comes on after the Titans broadcast.
You're going to have to wait a while to read reaction post-game now.
Yeah, give me a little bit more time. one of the difficulties for me, you all know I do this, I don't listen to anything or read anything, so I'm going to have to go a little longer now without reading and looking. And, this is a tough game for Tennessee, obviously. Alabama is a handful for anybody to handle. And, you just want to go in and play as well as you can, give yourself a chance maybe. And who knows? There's been Alabama teams come in that were greatly favored that didn't play very well. And conversely, there's been some Tennessee teams that have gone into this game and not played well. So, maybe you're going to have a lot of luck, but sometimes you get a lot of luck.
Doug, thank you.
You bet.